we're looking to basically for sheep farmers in across a range of environments in Australia. We're looking to compare conventional, and different people class conventional management in different ways, with regenerative approaches. So we're pairing farms in the same agroecological zone across four zones in Australia, and we're looking at a number of metrics. The primary one is net farm greenhouse gas emissions, so that accounts for carbon in soils and vegetation, as well as methane and nitrous oxide, but also natural capital, profit, productivity, and social acceptability.
So it's a very wide-ranging project. We've heard a lot about regen in the past. While it's gaining increasing popularity pretty much right around Australia and even further around the world, but there doesn't seem to be many studies, actual scientific studies, comparing it. Have you got much to draw on, or is this pretty early stage stuff?
Well, that's the intent of this research, and I think you hit the nail on the head. There's anecdotal evidence to suggest that regenerative approaches may have lower net greenhouse gas emissions than conventional approaches, but there's no real scientific studies, well, paired site comparisons such as that we're doing. And you could hypothesise that regen farms may have lower net greenhouse gas emissions. So there's a difference in the way that each farmer classifies regenerative approaches, I guess, and that's where the difference in all of these metrics will come from. Not just greenhouse gas emissions, but carbon storage, emissions coming out, which is enteric methane, manure methane, nitrous oxide and CO2, and the other metrics as well. So there's a number of principles that regen farmers accord by, and different farmers hold themselves to different extents. And it's in some contexts, regenerative approaches are quite polarised, but generally pasture species, there's grazing. People talk about whole of landscape management, which I think I'm not quite certain what that actually refers to, but I think what it means is you're actually thinking about your whole farm management. So where have you got animals? You're programming your grazing rotation. Where will you have animals next? Where should you take them off? It's almost like a feed budget in the dairy farm sense.
You mentioned earlier that the goal of this study is to pair off between a conventional farm and a regen farm. Now, I imagine there's a lot of variables in there. So how are you working to find those sort of farms and piece them together so that they're, I suppose, as even as possible when you're starting off?
Yeah, so that's a very good question. So we put out an EOI, an expression of interest. We obviously want farmers to engage with us. It's a 3-year study, and we sort of don't want them to pull out, you know, after 6 months sort of thing. So it's a time commitment, you know, it's a significant time commitment on their behalf. In doing that EOI, we're only subject to the people who put their hands up. So we can't pick two perfectly identical farms side by side over the fence. And I wouldn't probably suggest that such farms exist anyway. The farm sizes range from about 200 hectares to 16,000 hectares. The average annual rainfall ranges from about 200 millimetres per year, which is borderline arid, semi-arid, to more than 750 millimetres per year. So rainfall will be a big driver of productivity, no matter what the management. So what we've had to do is broadly pair them. And so they're in the same region, might be, you know, 50 or 100 kilometres apart. The rainfall might be 50 millimetres a year different, but we've just had to do the best we can with the EOIs, with the farmers that puts their hand up. So what we'll do is we'll calibrate our models based on existing status quo farm conditions. So how big's the farm? How many tonnes of wool do they produce a year? What pasture species do they have? Put in their exact climate, model their profit, model their biodiversity on farm spatially, model spatially explicit carbon. So basically get our models to reproduce exactly what's there now for the conventional and the regen ag farm. From that, we can get a really good quantification of net greenhouse gas emissions. And when I say net greenhouse gas emissions, I mean you've got total greenhouse gas emissions coming off, but you've also got sinks, which are CO2 removals, and that's going into the soil and, you know, in growing trees. So we want net greenhouse gas emissions. So we've got a baseline measure between the conventional and the regen ag. That's step one. That's essentially an impact assessment. The second part is going to them and co-designing mitigation options to further reduce greenhouse gas emissions in a profitable and socially acceptable way. It has to be profitable because all mitigation options come with a cost, but essentially farmers are business people and they have to make a profit to survive. The second part is it has to be socially acceptable. So we could reduce greenhouse gas emissions quite easily in a very deep cut fashion tomorrow if we removed all livestock and revegetated the whole farm. And that would be great in terms of carbon storage, but wouldn't be too good in terms of food security or, you know, producing important fibres such as wool. So we've got to look at, concentrate on multiple metrics, and we'll model a bunch of incremental adaptations that the farmers suggest, as well as industry people, and look at all of these metrics together, and then essentially assess, you know, what for your region, and this will be contextualised based on rainfall and soil type, for your region and your production system, what mitigation bundles, so stacked together incremental options, are actually going to be best in terms of reducing emissions, improving natural capital, improving biodiversity in a profitable and sustainable way. So it's a very multidisciplinary assessment.
So by the end of this, you'd hope that you would have essentially really a guide for anyone that's in these sort of test regions to how to improve their property if it turns out that the regen is the way to go.
Yeah, exactly.
Associate Professor Matthew Harrison from the Tasmanian Institute of Agriculture speaking there with Luke Radford about their study into regenerative agriculture. Well, a long-term sheep farmer in Tasmania's south says he's made the decision to practice regenerative farming on his Tasman Peninsula property. Guy Dubner spoke to reporter Erin Cooper about the farm at Saltwater River and why he's chosen the change to regenerative practices.
Okay, so we have about 800 acres here, some bush, about 300 acres worth of pasture, and we run a fine wool enterprise here, which we also support with a hay and silage contracting business in the summertime. So we scratched through with that. We were running cattle here, but we had to sell the cattle we had a few years ago when we had three dry seasons in a row. We've decided not to get back into them because they're a bit too expensive at the moment. No. So we're stuck with our sheep enterprise, which is performing really well for us.
Where does your wool go? What sort of happens to that once it leaves the farm?
Okay, so we have a Merivale bloodline, which is a Victorian bloodline, and we go for the fine end of the market, and we sell through the auction system, and so that'll go through to Melbourne for the auction system once we do our shearing. Generally, it will go to some of the higher end spinners for fine clothing production.
How many are in your flock that you've got typically?
Okay, so we have about 800 sheep here at the moment, which comprises at the moment just our brooding ewes and our hoggets, which are our last year's lambs. We generally sell our wethers at the two-tooth stage, and we also raise a mob of first cross prime lambs and sell them as stores in the early part of the autumn time.
Do you actually do meat production as well?
We do our meat production with our first cross prime lambs, yes. So they're the ones that we sell as store lambs, and so they generally sell quite well. We have other buyers that will buy them. They're farmers that don't want to go through the process of raising lambs themselves, so they don't run ewes, they just run dry sheep as such. And so they will buy store lambs from farms that do raise lambs. Sometimes they'll sell down south, other times they go up to the north and northwest. It depends a little bit what the season's like too. The autumn down in this southeast area was quite dry, so feed was a bit short, whereas the east coast was going very well and the northwest was going well too, so some of our lambs went to the northwest, and Victoria's obviously had a ripping season and some of our lambs went over there as well.
How is demand in general for store lambs? Do you find it's up at the moment?
Store lamb, the lamb market is actually fairly flat at the moment. It's not going gangbusters like it was this time last year for various reasons. Primarily, one of the key drivers is still actually the COVID factor and the fact that a lot of workers are still absent from meatworks, so they're not able to go at full production. So that's obviously having an impact on the sale yards then too.
And obviously pushing ahead with the business, what's next for you?
We're at a stage, a bit of a crossroads in some ways. We're changing our systems here on the farm over the last 3 years to a more regenerative agricultural approach. That's trying to get to a stage of using much less fertiliser or none at all preferably, and minimal chemical input as well, to work on sustainability and improving your soils to then improve your production that way, rather than using fertilisers and chemicals to improve your production. So that's one of the key drivers for the farm at the moment. So recently we've applied quite a lot of chicken manure onto our paddocks here for fertiliser, then it's sort of a bit of a maintenance run through the winter time. We'll do a fair bit of feeding out because it gets fairly cold from now on, so we won't get a lot of growth here through the winter time. So we feed silage to the sheep here, and they do very well on that, and it makes a really good standby feed.
And what made you want to get into the more regenerative practices on the farm, and how's that been going for you overall?
It's something that we've both wanted to do for quite a long time, and we've sort of been heading that way anyway. And when we see the impact that heavily industrialised farming is having on our soils, it becomes more and more apparent that those practices are getting less and less sustainable. And we get into that circle of always having to hit things with a bigger hammer, if you like. So when we have an infestation of weeds, we put on a heap of spray to control the weeds without looking at what's actually happening for the reasons that the weeds are all coming, all those sorts of issues. So we need to, as a country really, try to go down the path of being more sustainable, because our soils are very fragile in Australia, and so they can't cope all that well with intensive industrialised type agriculture.
And I imagine that would also be helping your bottom line a bit, especially at the moment with fertiliser prices going up and up and up.
Yes, it does. Fertiliser's got very expensive, chemicals have got very expensive, and so the less of those inputs you can have, the better.
At Saltwater River, sheep farmer Guy Dobner talking to reporter Aaron Cooper about his decision to practice regenerative farming.